The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
I'd like to begin this message today with a story. And this story is about two people in love. And these people are going to be referred to as a princess and a prince. And they're not actually royalty, but they're a princess and a prince in the idea of their upbringing, how they were raised, and how their fondness, their admiration is for each other. And so, once upon a time, there was a coddled and helpless princess who could afford the luxury of being scared of the little insignificant things in life. Now, she's the kind of girl who'd go running down the hallway at the drop of something as harmless as a mouse, jumping up onto the chair and flailing her arms around, screaming, just like you'd see in the cartoons. But those days are long gone for her now. You see, this girl met and married a wonderful prince. And almost 10 years ago, they believed that they had found their little corner of paradise when they left their small city apartment and they moved to a house in the country. However, paradise to the man was a bit different than it was to the woman. And you could say that they were not quite on the same page. While the woman envisioned them working together to rebuild, to fix up this wonderful little home, the husband saw them as blissfully spending their time together sitting in front of the television. But the woman was excited, and she was determined. She had a vision. So alone, she very excitedly managed to deconstruct just about every basic necessity in the home, before she finally gave up and succumbed to a life with her husband in front of the TV. And this is when the onset of unsanitary living conditions began. And the vision became blurred, and discerning the difference between cleanliness and filth, the clean and the unclean became more and more difficult for them to do. You know, she had never been much of a housekeeper, almost always having dishes and laundry piled up, as well as a bit of general disarray all over. But because she had deconstructed just about everything, and because her husband and then herself became lackadaisical, they began to let things go. And over time, they managed to descend into the depths of squalor. Then, major roof problems developed. Leaks were everywhere. Buckets of water were filled as the rain poured in, and the heating system from two ancient heaters failed, as well as the water heater. And to make matters worse, then the pipes froze and burst. For more than 6 months, the home was practically uninhabitable, except for sleeping. And during the winter, the home could only be tolerated from the use of electric blankets. Now, they finally got the cold water line repaired, but this was only to the bathtub. And that meant that the only way to flush the toilet was to draw water from the tub in buckets and pour it down the bowl. During the winter, the woman started riding with her husband on his delivery route. And she did this just so she could stay warm and have access to working bathrooms. Every other day, they would drive to a truck stop 40 miles in the opposite direction just to use the showers and their coin machines, doing just enough laundry to get by. Meanwhile, piles of everything else wearable just lay dirty at home. No dusting, no sweeping. In fact, it wasn't even possible because there were construction supplies everywhere, along with construction debris, leaving them only small paths to walk around the home. Sawdust was everywhere, along with grit from ripped out plaster. Clapboards from the outside could be seen from the inside, and the winter winds cut cold between them. Gaping holes in the floor left from attempts to repair termite damage left them open for more cold. But even worse, creepy crawly things came in droves from the dark, dank boughs below. They were infested with big brown wolf spiders, many of which were pregnant. And so when you try to squash one or to spray one with some repellent, babies would disperse from them in every direction, kind of like ripples when you threw a stone in a pond. In the summer, the spiders diminished, but these were replaced by flea infestation. And this infestation was so bad that it nearly killed one of their cats. Insect repellent became very common to them. It was like a deodorant, but it didn't work very well. Mice were also present year-round. And they would actually run up on the pillow of this woman as she slept, taunting her in her sleep. And she caught many of them by the tail. Some of them were not even as big as a thumbnail. Heavy layers of dust, dirt, and muck completely coated every surface of the house. And this was made even more despicable because the two of them were chain smokers. And so a gooey residue was emitted from kerosene heaters that were purchased to replace the defunct heating system. And add to that the nicotine from the cigarettes, and you made for a layer so thick that it could actually be scraped off most places with a putty knife. Areas of the house that were once white were completely brown. Litter boxes overflowed for weeks, even months on end before they were tended, and eventually there was urine even from the woman everywhere as her health deteriorated. There was no running water in the kitchen. In fact, the kitchen didn't even have a sink, so there was no water for the place for the water to even go into, and there were not even any cupboards to put the sink on if they wanted to, because long ago the dream of reconstruction had failed. Now, not surprisingly, the health problems started setting in. So 4 years ago, the man developed a clot in his colon, and he ended up in the hospital with something called ischemic colitis. Now, as scary as that was, that episode ended up being the least of their problems. Shortly after that, she had started having gynecological problems and ended up in very bad shape. She started flooding almost nonstop and passing clots as big as a piece of liver. And this stayed with her for almost 2 years. At the same time, she had become terribly incontinent and was, for all practical purposes, a shut-in because she couldn't flinch without emptying her bladder. And during that same time, she was suffering incredible pain of a tooth that was decayed all the way to the root, exposing the nerve. This was their life. They lived their days surrounded by a sea of filth, sickness, and suffering. The place was unclean, unsanitary, disgusting, and their lives were a nightmare. And even though she was now physically, mentally, and emotionally unable to do anything about it, the beloved husband did even less. All hope seemed lost. Let's turn over to Leviticus in chapter 11. Leviticus in chapter 11. Brethren, would you or I ever allow such a thing to happen to us, to our family? Would we ever allow such filth and unclean things to creep into our lives? Would we willingly give into such a lazy, almost lethargic state, being unmotivated to repair, to clean, to rebuild our homes and our lives? Well, the answer is no. Would a true prince or princess, someone with dignity, allow themselves to be defiled in such a way? No, because they have certain standards to live by. They have ethics and morals to uphold. And we have morals. We have standards and ethics too, don't we? And those standards are set by God, because God has standards. And like most things of God, he has given us physical representations to act out that represent spiritual aspects of godly nature. And so the old adage, which is biblically based but not found in the Bible, cleanliness is godliness, is true, as cleanliness represents holiness. And so we have been given a wonderful array of food to nourish us and to sustain our lives. And this represents spiritual meat of the Word, that which is holy, that nourishes us, that sustains us. And we are told in Leviticus 11 that some of the meat in this world is clean and good for us to eat, and some is unclean. And so let's look at this in Leviticus 11, beginning in verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying to them, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, these are the beasts which you shall eat among all the beasts on the earth. Whatsoever parteth the hoof, and is cloven-footed, and cheweth the cud among the beasts, that shall you eat. Nevertheless, these shall you not eat, of them that chew the cud, or of them that divide the hoof, as the camel, because he chews the cud, but divideth not the hoof. He is unclean to you. And the coney, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean to you. And the hare, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean to you. And the swine, though he divide the hoof, and be cloven-footed, yet he chews not the cud, he is unclean to you. Of their flesh shall you not eat, and their carcass shall you not touch. They are unclean to you. And so we are given a direct description of what types of beasts are clean for human consumption and which ones are not. They must have split hooves, and they must chew the cud. Both of these are required. Why? Why is this? Well, this is because of the structure of the animal. Those that chew the cud have more than one stomach, and therefore they digest their food more fully than others. And it's also found that in the act of chewing the cud, a large portion of the poisonous properties of plants that are eaten by these animals, it is passed off by the salivary glands. Now, since this vegetation that these animals consume as a building block for their flesh, the ones that chew the cud, their meat is healthier for us. It's easier to digest. It contains more of the nutritious juices that we need for building blocks of life. Now, animals which do not chew the cud, they convert their food less perfectly, and their flesh is therefore not healthy. Their meat is more apt to carry impurities, which can be transferred to humans that eat it. It's more difficult to digest. It can make people sick, and it can even kill some people if it's not properly cooked. Now, the animals that may be eaten must also have cloven or parted hooves, as the scriptures say, as well as chew the cud. And this is another means of freeing the flesh of the animal from noxious substances. Now, in the case where animals with parted hooves are feeding in unfavorable conditions, whether it is a place where they're stepping in fecal matter or poisonous plants, this is often passed between the toes of the animal. While the animals with undivided hooves feeding on the same ground, they can become affected in the legs from the toxins that are in the pasture. So we see that there are physical reasons for the animals being labeled as unclean and clean. And then God goes on and he outlines the water dwellers. And let's look at this in Leviticus 11 and verse 9. These shall you eat of all that are in the waters, whatsoever have fins and scales in the waters, in the seas, and in the rivers, them shall you eat. And all that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, of all that move in the waters, and of any living thing which is in the waters, they shall be an abomination unto you. They shall be even an abomination unto you. You shall not eat of their flesh, but you shall have their carcasses in abomination. Whatsoever hath no fins nor scales in the waters, that shall be an abomination unto you. He repeats it again. This is very important. So the water dwellers that have fins and scales, they are physically clean. And this is because of their design. Their fins give them the ability to freely move about the waters. And thus they can avoid toxic environments. They can swim away from this and not be affected by it. Their scales also act as a protective garment, if you will, to the fish. And interestingly, their scales, I read, also allow them to perspire, sweating off toxins. But those water creatures that do not have fins and scales are unclean, and they're often quite poisonous, but there are those that dare to eat them. And they do this at a risk. Some of them may become sick when a sea creature is not cautiously prepared. And we've all heard recently in the news about the very poisonous blowfish that has to be prepared so carefully. And there has been people that have died from this, from eating it, because it was not prepared in the right way. Special preparation is necessary for unclean water dwellers because of the high amount of toxins in the fish. But it should not be necessary, because we should not even be partaking of these things. They are unclean, as designated by God. Next, beginning in verse 13, God moves to the birds. And he says, "And these are they which you shall have an abomination among the fowls. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The eagle and the ossifrage and the osprey. The ossifrage is a vulture, and the osprey is like a buzzard. And the vulture and the kite after his kind, every raven after his kind, and the owl and the night hawk and the cuckoo, which I believe is a seagull, and the hawk after his kind, and the little owl and the cormorant and the great owl and the swan and the pelican and the gyre eagle and the stork and the heron after her kind and the lapwing and the bat, all fowls that creep going upon all four shall also be an abomination unto you. So these are all birds of prey that are listed here, and they are considered unclean. They are animals that feed on the flesh of other creatures, and they will even feed on dead and rotting flesh. And this is in part why they are harmful. They are not clean food. They are not healthy for us to eat. The inference of this passage allows that all birds that are not mentioned here are clean to eat. And these other birds are ones that feed on vegetation. So next on the menu, beginning in verse 21, is flying insects. And I would like Mr. Feller to and everyone to pass around a picture of some of these insects. And God tells us that there's only one kind of insect that is clean for food. Take a look at the picture as I'm reading this passage in verse 21. Yet these may you eat of every flying creeping thing that goeth upon all four, which have legs above their feet, to leap withal upon the earth. Even of these them you may eat, the locust after his kind, and the bald locust, which is the katydid after his kind, and the beetle, which is actually the cricket after his kind, and the grasshopper after his kind. But all other flying, creeping things which have 4 feet shall be an abomination unto you. Now, as you may or may not know, there are very many types of grasshoppers, locusts, crickets, katydids, and these in the pictures here that Mr. Bradyk is looking at are just a few of them. They're just a few. I just thought it would be a little fun to kind of look at these pictures. I'm not telling anybody to go out and start eating them, but if we needed to, they are clean. They seem to be clean because of their diet and their behavior. Now, they eat vegetation, and they are usually found in sanitary areas. If finding themselves in an unfit environment, they have the ability to jump. They have the ability to fly away from anything that might be noxious. You know, I found it a little interesting that some Arab peoples that do eat these today, and they do this by frying them in oil, and it's said that if they're sprinkled with salt or dried or smoked, that they kind of taste like red herring. I'm not sure. I've never tried one. I actually do not have a desire to, but they're clean. It's interesting what God has designed them, and he designed them in a way to where they are clean animals and can be consumed. Now, in verse 27, if you jump down, God describes more unclean animals. And whatsoever goeth upon his paws among all manner of beasts that go on all four, those are unclean unto you. Whoso toucheth their carcass shall be unclean until the evening. And he that beareth the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. They are unclean unto you. These also shall be unclean unto you among the creeping things that creep on the earth, the weasel, and the mouse, and the tortoise after his kind, and the ferret, and the chameleon, and the lizard, and the snail, and the mole. Next, brethren, I'm going to skip a few verses here, and we'll go down to verse 41, and God moves to the arachnids, the reptiles, the snakes, verse 41 through 43. And every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. Whatsoever goeth upon the belly, and whatsoever goeth upon all four, whatsoever hath more feet among all creeping things that creep upon the earth, them you shall not eat, for they are an abomination. You shall not make yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creepeth, neither shall you make yourselves unclean with them, that you should be defiled thereby. So these types of creatures that are spoken of here are obviously unclean for human consumption. I mean, if you just consider the venomous spiders, the snakes, the scorpions, I mean, how could they be fit for people to eat? How could they be healthy for us? And then the reptiles, if you look at them, their thick skin, it's like armor. And when this keeps a lot of the toxins that they eat inside, it keeps it in their flesh. Could you imagine barbecued iguana? Tarantula kebabs? I mean, it's just disgusting. But there are people out there that defile themselves and they eat these things. Now, on a side note, this is not exactly in line with the subject of my message, but I thought it was interesting that we know the spiritual things of God are clearly seen in his creation. And so we see that in the angelic realm, angels are reflected in the lion and in the ox and in the eagle. Now, it's my belief that the arachnid, the reptile community, may likely reflect the demonic realm. I mean, just look at their structure. Look at their eyes. They're cold-blooded. They trap. They weave webs. And they inject poison to kill their prey. This is demonic. Now, this is speculation, of course, but it is possible. So has God judged rightly in showing us what is unclean and clean for food? Of course. Of course he has. I mean, he designed it. He knows how their innards work. He knows what's healthy and what's not healthy for us to eat. But is this all that the food laws mean? Is it only physical, what we eat, what we put into our bodies? I mean, this is important. It's very important. But there are millions of people out there that eat unclean things, and they seem to get away with it. So is this just a health issue, or is there something more? Well, the answer is obviously yes and no. Yes, this is a health issue, but it is not strictly about physical health. There is more to this. There is a far more important lesson to be learned here in choosing to not eat the unclean things and to only eat that which is clean. And this is pointed out in the following verses. If you go down to verse 44 in Leviticus 11, God says, "For I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore sanctify yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy." Now this is the ultimate reason for the law of the beasts and of the fowl, and of every living creature that moveth in the waters, and of every creature that creeps upon the earth, as the scriptures say. Why? Verse 47, "To make a difference between the unclean and the clean, and between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten." It is to make a difference between the unclean and the clean. And once again, God has given us a physical representation of that which is spiritual. And you and I were not to allow ourselves to put into our bodies that which is unclean. And this is a type of not allowing unclean things in our minds, in our lives, in our behavior, into our hobbies, into our habits, into our thoughts, into our speech. We must make a difference. And this is incredibly the ultimate purpose of God's clean and unclean laws. Like some food that is unfit for human consumption, there are things in life that are morally unclean, and they are unfit for human behavior. There is conduct that is morally repulsive to God. And there are things that we are simply not to do. Now, this spiritual concept, we act it out every day as we eat every meal, as we do not put unclean things into our mouths to sustain us. We do this as we order at the restaurant, as we go to the deli, as we go to the grocery market, and we pick up the packages, and we read the boxes, and we read the cans, and we look for that unclean thing and not allow it to come into our life. The people of God do this. We nitpick about the food we eat, and we critique the labels. But do we nitpick and critique our behavior? do we nitpick our conduct, our entertainment, the music we listen to, the programs we watch, the websites we visit, our conversation? There are a lot of unclean things that can enter in and affect us, so we have to be on guard. We have to look for them, and we have to weed them out. Let's look at the movies, for example. Now, I don't think I need to tell anyone how bad film has become today. I mean, the moral quality of the movies and television has plummeted into the toilet. Violence, sex, anti-family themes, ungodly themes, they dominate our entertainment industry. In September of 2000, FTC report revealed that U.S. media corporations were routinely ignoring their own rating restrictions and actively marketing violent entertainment to children and teens. In fact, the study showed that 80% of R-rated movies and 70% of restricted video games and 100% of music that have explicit content with those warning labels were being marketed to kids under 17. They did this on purpose. And we can look around us and we can see that it's working. The Parents Television Council indicates that sexual topics such as oral sex and pornography, which were virtually absent from television over a decade ago, are commonplace in the family hour. And this report showed that foul language increased by almost 80%, and the rate of offensive family violence in the Family Hour program jumped from 70% in just 2 years. The study focuses on programming in which an estimated 10 million kids are tuning in. The unclean, brethren, is everywhere. It's being marketed to children. The rebellion against parents and family values today are also horrendous. And it's actually seen as okay by most people, as something natural, as something that's accepted. Why, I watched a family film called Flicka the other day, and it's about a wild horse and this young girl's relationship with this horse. But in this film, this girl felt compelled to try and tame this Mustang, which her father and her brother had captured. Now, her father told her, do not go near that horse. You stay away from that horse. It is dangerous. You are going to get hurt. But the girl repeatedly rose up late in the night after her parents went to sleep and tried to tame this horse against her father's command. Now, the funny thing is that this movie made it seem that this was acceptable behavior. And this was even portrayed as admirable for her to disobey her parents because she loved this horse and she knew better than they did. So it's okay to go against their word. Now, at the end of this film, she used this horse in a contest without her parents knowing, and she won a large sum of money, which saved the family farm. But do you see the message here? It is heroic to disobey your parents. She was a champion. And it increasingly doesn't matter much to kids what their parents think because of what they see in movies and on television. And they believe that their parents, they're not hip to the scene. They don't really know what's going on. I know what's going on. I know better than they do. And as the scriptures say of the end time in Isaiah in chapter 3, as for my people, children will be their oppressors and women shall rule over them. And I see the scripture as being fulfilled today in part. Children think that they know better than the parents. And many parents, they go along with it because they don't want to fight it. They don't want the struggle. And women are increasingly assuming the role of husbands in marriage. And society promotes this. And we allow it. Many adults allow their children to dictate what kind of movies they're going to watch, what kind of games they want to play. And many parents allow their kids to practically run their lives. And this oppresses them. The people who love them, who care for them, who should be respected, who should be honored, who should be looked up to for guidance and for teaching good values. Now, these are just some of the messages in our entertainment industry that are infiltrating people's lives. And there are messages being broadcast by the God of this world everywhere. But are we aware? Do we see them? Are we making a difference between the unclean and the clean? Are we looking for it like we scan the labels at the supermarket? Or are we allowing unclean things to creep into our lives? Now, I find myself increasingly seeing bad messages everywhere. And I would like to admonish us that if we see these things, if we notice them, point them out. Let's talk about it. Talk about it to your spouse. Talk about it to your children. Let them know that it's there. They must know. They have to know, and we have to teach them. Why, even just the other day, I saw a series of commercials for the new Dodge Caravan. Now, this is an amazing vehicle. It's just a wonderful little machine. It has second row seats that swivel around. It has a pop-up table in the middle. It has third row seat that's powered, so you just got to push a button and the third row opens and closes. But these are not the selling point of this vehicle. What sells this minivan is the Sirius backseat TV DVD player, which pops down from the roof, and a second plug-in and play video screen for gaming or any other audio or video device, which also pops down from the roof. It also has a MyGig multimedia infotainment system, a Sirius satellite radio, and of course a navigation system. Now, all of these luxuries, they're nice. They're fun little toys. But are they helpful? Possibly. Some are helpful, but some are not. You know what I saw in this commercial? I saw mom driving the kids home from a day of fun, and then she calls her husband on the center console through her infotainment system and begins to talk to him, gets off the phone and looks in the rearview mirror and sees one child with headphones on watching a DVD, the other child with headphones on playing a video game, and she says to herself, "Great day." And then another commercial for the same vehicle shows grumpy old dad getting into the car, a little upset that he has to go somewhere with the family, and then a smile comes to his face as he starts to play around with the infotainment system. And then he looks to the back seat, and again he sees one of the kids with headphones on, grinning away, watching some cartoon or something, and another child with headphones on playing the video game, and everything is just wonderful. But what's the message here? Do we see the message in this commercial and even in this vehicle? Now, some would say it could make everybody happy. It brings the family together. But in reality, it is tearing them apart. You see, this vehicle, this commercial, promotes the idea that they can all be happy in their own little world. And so everybody climbs into the car, and somebody gets on the satellite radio, and somebody gets on the DVD player, and somebody gets on the gaming system, and we can all be self-fulfilled together. It's a paradox. Let's turn to Job in chapter 31. Job in chapter 31. The point is, these messages, these anti-family messages, the ungodly themes are everywhere, and it's our responsibility to recognize them and make a difference between the unclean and the clean, between the holy and the profane. Now, many shows, many sitcoms, programs today, they're being used to promote immorality. And sitcoms are based, many of them are based upon lusting after other men and women outside of marriage. How about Sex and the City? The theme of our age. And this behavior, it's seen as normal. But the scriptures say different. Christ said that we are not even to look after another one, to lust after them. Now, even the patriarchs were aware of this spiritual concept. As Job said in chapter 31, beginning in verse 1, he says, "I made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a maid?" The contemporary English version of this scripture rightly paraphrases this as saying, I promised myself never to stare with desire at a young woman. And then Job goes on to say in verse 2, for what portion of God is there from above? And what inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is not destruction to the wicked and a strange punishment to the workers of iniquity? So Job had stated that he made a pact with his eyes, that he would not give in to lustful looking. Have we made a covenant with our eyes? Or do we allow images of sex and violence to fill our eyes in the name of entertainment? The Movie Picture Association has a rating system, don't they? We're all pretty familiar with this. They rate movies based upon content, and so G movies are for general audiences, and that means that they do not include sexual acts or strong violence or drug use. And PG movies are ones where parental guidance is suggested. Now, this means that there may be some material that's unsuitable for children, and that the film, and I quote them, should be investigated by their parents or by adults before allowing children to see it. But how many parents do this today? How many parents pre-screen movies or learn about the theme of this film before they allow their children to see it? I'd guess it's very few. And then there's PG-13, which is a more stern warning to parents, but again, this rating, it gets ignored by most adults today. And then we have R. Now, R means that a film contains adult themes and activity, hard language, intense violence, sexually oriented nudity, drug abuse, or other elements, and I'm quoting them. And parents are counseled by the MPAA to take this rating very seriously, it says. But again, are parents today taking this rating seriously? Or are they just trying to pacify their children and to give them what they want, and allowing them to see things that are influencing their behavior and their future? There is one last rating on here, which is called NC-17, and this is a rating that means no one under 17 is recommended to view this film, and we don't see too many of those today. I believe this rating was actually created to replace the rating of X. So the world has a rating system for movies. And God has a rating system, doesn't he? Do any of these ratings match up with God's standards? No. In fact, this rating system has declined over the years, and I think all of us have noticed this. And it's become more tolerant as society's morals deteriorate. And so G films are often PG, and PG films are often R-rated. And R is now soft porn. And many films are so sexually and violently graphic that the tenderhearted are shocked in disgust. But the tolerant are fixated in amazement. And they love the thrill of blood, of destruction, of sex. But this should not be so with us. The Christian rating system is of a higher standard, and we should not hesitate to turn a movie off or to walk out of a theater if we do not agree with what's being shown here. Ask for your money back. They will give it back. I have done this. How about music? Are we discerning between the unclean and the clean music we listen to? Do we hear the difference between the somber, the pleasant, the uplifting music as compared to the dark and the evil? But again, we need to be on guard, because even if the songs are uplifting in sound, are we listening to what the musicians are saying? Can we discern the messages that are being sent to us in these songs? Because there are messages everywhere, brethren. They are everywhere. Are these songs edifying or not? You know, so much of the music today, especially the pop and the rock music, sends a message of encouraging promiscuous behavior, of defying authority, of being selfish, giving into our own desires, getting all we can get for ourselves. The sexual content in some of the music today is explicit, and it's often very graphic, especially when dealing with some R&B and rap groups. The message of defiance and violence, it's clear, and it's glorified just as it is in the television and movies. Our society is getting so bad, degrading moral behaviors are rampant. I read an interesting article forwarded to me by Mr. Bradick. Even in our prestigious schools, they are lowering their standards and offering courses in unclean things. Here's a quote from an article. In the hallowed halls of some of America's most elite and expensive educational institutions, students are taking classes in subjects like garbage, superpowers, and zombies. And the sticker price? As much as $5,000 a pop. Santa Clara University offers a course, The Joy of Garbage. There's also The Science of Superheroes at the University of California at Irvine. At Xavier University in Cincinnati, Ohio, students look at the role of swine in American history. Columbia College in Chicago has Zombies in Popular Media. And then at one time, a course at the Vanderbilt University, they had a class for freshmen last fall that used the hit TV series Lost as their primary text. Brethren, society is clearly not making a difference between the unclean and the clean, between that which is holy and profane. So you and I have to. We have to do this. We cannot allow ourselves to be influenced by these things. Let's turn over to Ephesians in chapter 5. Ephesians in chapter 5. So how about the jokes we tell? Or the ones we laugh at? Are they good, clean jokes? Would Christ laugh at some of the humor that you and I enjoy? And our speech? What about our words? Do we find ourselves cursing at times, using euphemisms, use slang words for God and for Jesus Christ, and feel that it's okay because it sounds harmless, because Opie uses them? Have we allowed our standards to drop because clean-cut, seemingly wholesome people of today say things like gosh and jeepers and fudge and shoot? Please consider, brethren, that although these words may seem harmless and wholesome, this world's and these people's standards are not ours. They are not God's. We are to have higher standards of cleanliness and therefore a higher quality of speech. And while seeming to be clean, many of these euphemisms are tainted and they carry a mark of disrespect and filth as they leave our lips. Now, Paul reflects on this when writing to the church in Ephesus in chapter 5 and in verse 3, where he says, "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints, neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor jesting, and which are not convenient, that is proper, but rather give of thanks," that is, use grateful language. "For this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God." And of course, in Colossians, we've read many times to let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer every man. And salt, it's a type of purifier. And our words should be pure. They should be clean. And so that we know how to properly converse with other men and women in a cleanly manner. Is there a watch in our mouth at church or with our brethren, and then that watch comes off when we get to work or in the grocery store? Do our mannerisms change? Something to consider. How about food? Now, we might think we're doing okay because we do not eat unclean meat. But do we instead consume unhealthy portions of some foods? Because, you know, too much of almost anything is actually bad for you and unhealthy. So a glass of wine or two can be helpful. But do we go overboard and have 3 and 4 and 5? Do we find ourselves drinking 1 and then 2 and then 3 sodas a day? What about all the preservatives and chemicals in pre-prepared foods? Now, even clean food today can be technically labeled as unclean in the sense that it's not good for us, or if it's misused or we misuse it. Something to consider. Now, the point is, brethren, that we should be looking at this unclean issue closely. We should be looking at it in our everyday lives. Are we recognizing the areas of our lives that are becoming dirty, tainted, unclean by God's standards? And we might tell ourselves that we would never budge on eating unclean meats. There's no way. But then we move on some of our behaviors. 2 Peter in chapter 2. You see, brethren, the Church of God actually trails the world in some respects. What used to shock and appall us does not have the same effect anymore, and we have all become jaded to some degree. And we left this world behind when we committed ourselves to God, when we repented and were baptized, and we said we are going to live God's way of life. But we cannot return to that which we once did and knew, that which is unclean. And this is pointed out in 2 Peter in chapter 2, beginning in verse 20, where it says, "For if after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled therein and overcome, the latter end is worse with them than the beginning. For it had been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness, then, after they have known it, to turn from the holy commandment delivered unto them. But it is happened unto them, according to the true proverb, the dog is turned to his own vomit again, and the sow that was washed to her wallowing in the mire." And so, brethren, you and I have left a life of uncleanness, of pollutions, as said here. And this was done through the knowledge of Jesus Christ. And we cannot escape a life of iniquity and sin and then allow ourselves to return to it. It is like a dog going back to his vomit and lapping it up. Well, this sadly has happened to many people. I think all of us have seen this take place firsthand. But just because we made it through does not mean it cannot happen to us now. We have to make a difference and continue to do so until the coming of Jesus Christ. 1 Peter in chapter 1, just over a few pages, 1 Peter in chapter 1. God's standards for cleanliness are like a wall that we build around ourselves, not allowing filth to come in to our bodies and into our minds. Now, if we lower our standards, we lower the wall, and we allow unclean things to hop over it, tainting, infecting, and affecting us. Now, like the princess and the prince in the story that I began with, they started off with high hopes. They had a vision, and they had standards, if you will. But they slowly let them down, and their lives deteriorated, and things got worse and worse. And the unclean turned to squalor. Filth, vermin, sickness crept into their lives. And this can spiritually happen to us. We can become sick with a spirit of muck, if you will, if we allow our standards for cleanliness to be lowered. 1 Peter in chapter 1, beginning in verse 13, it says, "Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts in your ignorance, but as he which hath called you is holy, so be you holy in all manner of conversation," that is, in all manner of behavior, of conduct. Let's go to Ezekiel 44 for a final scripture. Obedience is doing what the one who knows best requires us to do. And God is our master, and he knows what's best. And obedience to him requires us to make a difference between the unclean and the clean. And put out, not partaking of that which is profane. We are to then physically and spiritually take in that which is holy. And we are all striving to be like God, to be like Christ one day. But to do so, we must practice and implement this today into our lives. Practice being holy as he is holy. Ezekiel 44, which actually we read several weeks ago, speaks of a time in the millennium when Christ will return, when the temple will be rebuilt on the earth. And this chapter speaks of the priests who will serve in the temple, the sons of Zadok, as it says. And it goes on to describe the manner of clothes that they will wear, the procedures they will take, and their various rituals, how they will act, what they will do. And this is all in the ministering of unto God in the temple. And the point being here is that they shall be holy and clean according to God's standards. He requires this of them. And this is very similar to what was instructed to ancient Israel. And in verse 23, God states this ultimate purpose and the position. He says, "And they shall teach my people the difference between the holy and profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean." And so God taught this lesson to ancient Israel in the past. And he expounded on this lesson through Jesus Christ. And he teaches us the same lesson today. And this lesson, this concept, it will be taught by his ministers in the kingdom. And if we are to be spiritual leaders in that kingdom, we must be able to discern between the unclean and the clean today. And we must put out that which is unclean whenever and wherever it is found. You see, the holy and the profane, they don't mix. And brethren, we cannot waver between the two. Like Elijah told Israel as they wavered in faith, "How long halt you between two opinions? If God be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." And we cannot, brethren, in like manner, be hopping back and forth between two opinions. Is it clean? Is it unclean? I don't know. It looks clean today. Tomorrow looks a little unclean. Next week it looks clean again. We cannot be going back and forth like this. We must take a stand one way or the other. And since we know that the Lord is God, let's stick to his standards. And with this, we cannot go wrong. 2 years ago, the princess managed to have a hysterectomy and a bladder repair, and then began slowly getting rid of all her bad teeth. While all that helped, it didn't take care of the root of their problem. In addition, she was diagnosed with diabetes, has chronic muscle back pain, suffers from chronic sleep disorders, has chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and they think that she now has congestive heart failure. However, at one point, she was vegetating in the recliner, lamenting of the fact that she was living with such debilitating conditions and living in such overwhelming squalor, and that she had no one to help and no one to blame. And this struck a nerve. And she thought that even though she was married to a prince who may have turned out to be a toad, the fact remained that she was her own person and she had to make a move. With that realization, and the only thing left to do was to suck it up and to do something about it. And so she started. And it was slow at first. And it was very overwhelming. And at first, all she was able to do was empty the overflowing ashtray. And then she started picking up trash 30 seconds at a time, all around her recliner. Then she put a trash can beside her chair, and she began to put debris in the trash can. And then since she managed to create a little oasis in their house around her chair, she moved to the computer desk, all the while not letting the previous clean spot become unclean again. Now after that, it began to get easier. She began to create more little pockets of order just by nibbling away at it, bit by bit, a little bit at a time. And eventually those little pockets, they started to meet up. And she found that whole areas of her house were beginning to come together. Over the course of the last 2 years, she managed to move tons of building materials, rebuild the kitchen, moved masses of boxes and furniture, and in the process cleared and cleaned out tons of useless clutter. She scrubbed every wall, every surface, and cleaned up the thick grime built up over the years from neglect. And at some point, her prince got on board, and they started to work as a team. Today, with the exception of replacing the heat and updating the electricity, all the major repairs to their home has been done. A new roof was put on, all the breaches in the walls and on the floors have been fixed. Dishes are kept clean and put away, just like the laundry. The bathroom is clean and is respectable and ready for use by anybody at any time. Floors are swept regularly. The bed is made daily. Trash is in cans only and taken out weekly. And, of course, the cat boxes are maintained. Now, these days, they can openly welcome anyone into their home. This is a true story. And the message for us is this. We cannot allow our standards to drop. We cannot allow unclean things to creep into our lives. Whether it's movies, television, speech, music, or any other habit or behavior that we may have. If we do this, the house becomes weakened and things begin to deteriorate. And it becomes susceptible to filth, to vermin, to profanity. We must clean up our act, if you will, bit by bit. And eventually whole areas of our lives begin to come together in a godly way. We must be on guard, and we must be constantly aware of what's going around us. Morals are declining in this world, and values are changing. Integrity is disappearing. But this cannot be so with us. We are to be different. We cannot allow our standards to be influenced by the world we live in. This would be unclean, and this would be unacceptable to God. And therefore, it should be unacceptable to us as well. So let's rightly discern, brethren, between that which is profane and that which is holy. And let's make a difference between the unclean and the clean.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you found the message beneficial. If you would like to know more about the Eternal Church of God, we would like to hear from you. You may contact us at 1-800-723-6108. We also invite you to visit our website at eternalcog.org. Once again, thanks for listening.